The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And very excited for this one. Paige Comrie, you've probably seen her on Instagram, on other social media feeds. You've probably read her work or seen some just really gorgeous photos covering all things wine. And Paige is joining the pod now. Paige, good afternoon. Thanks so much for being part of the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for considering me an interesting person.
The funny thing is, even before when we connected, I was following, I've been following your account for a long time. And let's actually start here. The term wine influencer, it seems like it gets a lot of attention. It generates a lot of passion or very polarizing. But let's just start here. How much work does it go into for even just one of your posts? Because I think some people think, oh, wine influencer, I take a photo, I put it up, it's 5 minutes, and I get a free lunch and a bottle of wine out of that. But that can't be further from the truth, can it?
True. It's so much work. I mean, for a single post, I want to say it probably takes me, I mean, from like conception, like I just probably spend like an hour conceptualizing the photo. Like I am working with the brand back and forth. If it's a sponsored post, it does take more work as a sponsored post than organic. So probably an hour of prep work, getting everything organized with the brand, figuring out like what the key marketing messages are, what the wine tastes like what is the story that I want to tell, what's exciting to get people interested in the wine. So that's all the like grunt work. Then I actually do the photo shoot, which probably takes another like 30 to 60 minutes, depending. Photos are my like passion, but now we do reels. And so they each have their own qualms. Actually editing is another like 20, 30. If it's video, sometimes it takes me an hour because I will have to write the script and I'll do the voiceover editing, putting it with all of the clips. So that's another hour actually posting. And once I post, I don't just like post and disappear, right? Like I'm engaging with my audience, I'm having conversations, and that probably takes me another like hour. So all in, I feel like each post is like 5 to 6 hours of work. It's just spread out over time.
Oh yeah, and especially the ones with the video and things like that, you can tell. My girlfriend has a smaller little wine Instagram account, Wine Bottle Travels, and it'll take her several hours versus my account stinks. I'm like, it's just simple, quick, dirty photos. And by dirty, I just mean quick shot. She hates it. She's like, no, you got to frame it up here. The lighting's here. Your background's horrible. So I appreciate the amount of time it takes for yours. We'll get more into just all things working with brands and where you are now. But I want to go back to the beginning. I was doing some reading. And is your wine origin story, is it really picking up a copy of Wine for Dummies when you were in college?
Yeah, I was freshly 21. I grew up in Michigan. Neither of my parents drank at all. Like, don't touch the stuff. Now my dad's starting to get into it, but my mom still has zero interest. Yeah. So I knew nothing. I was freshly 21 at the University of Michigan, and I was going through their business program, and I felt like a complete outsider. A lot of that program, the people who it attracts are very single demographic, single-minded. It just wasn't necessarily, I didn't feel like I fit in. So I was trying to figure out how I could fit in like the business world more. And wine and golf were the two things that came to mind. Right. But it was December, December in Michigan. So I was not about to go golfing. So I picked up Wine for Dummies over Christmas break and just absolutely fell in love. I became obsessed. I loved how it touches so many different things like culture and history and geography and biology, chemistry, like just everything, like every sort of like facet of life, like somehow encompasses. And so I ended up, after I finished it, devoured it, I picked up every single book about wine that I could find at my public library. Just kept reading and reading and reading. I went back to school and there was a really cute little wine shop on campus. And so once a week, I would then pick up one of the like 18 noble varieties as told by Wine Folly. I'd pick up one of those bottles. I would pair it with a recommended food dish and have a little me date and nerd out over wine.
I love it. Did you expect, when you first picked up that book, did you expect that you would suddenly go full, not only the rabbit hole, but now you're, so much of your life is now dedicated to wine?
No, I had no idea. I was a business major. I was as out of practicality. I loved photography. I thought I wanted to be a fashion photographer, realized that wasn't necessarily going to make me money or necessarily pan out. That's a hard industry. So I went into fashion, like business side of fashion. I was a buyer for Bloomingdale's for many years. And I just kept leaning into wine, just kept learning more because it was something I wanted to know more about. Little baby Paige would be so proud of where I am today.
By the way, what is your dad like? What's your dad's wine preferences now?
So I took him on a trip to Walla Walla a couple of years ago, and he really loves Cabernet from Walla Walla. Like
It's
more fruit forward, lighter tannins, food friendly, high acidity type wines.
and certainly less expensive
Yes.
than Napa. Certainly far less expensive. By the way, as we are taping this, so let's just get the elephant out there. It's March 6th. Whatever's going on with tariffs, I have a very simple message for people that are buying wine. I love the fact that people in Ontario are now trying to discover more local wines. We don't do that enough here in Ontario. But my other message is don't punish winemakers and farmers in Oregon, in Washington State, or in California, because I imagine most of them do not approve of what's been going on. So both things can be true. You can now love local wine here in Ontario, but don't shun American wine because of a couple politicians.
True. I think that's a good message in general, though, too, that we should be drinking more local, regardless of what's happening politically.
Well, it should, but
Like,
like I would imagine where you are, Napa and California wines and Sonoma and all of that is all over wine lists and menus and is much more embraced. And it is in British Columbia, but here in Ontario, we have a weird thing where we don't drink enough local, and it's been a big part of this podcast. So anyway, just wanted to get that out there. But yes, Walla Walla also a really good I really like the Syrahs as well. I mean, we could just geek out about that area. But we'll get back to you. Actually, with the photography thing, how great is a bottle of wine as a subject? Just different sizes, shapes, labels can be really artistic or really bland, but you have so many choices. I imagine that's a cool thing as well as a photographer, is the bottle of wine offers a lot of different options.
Yes and no. So I think that's part of why wine struggles on social media in general, because a bottle of wine isn't necessarily visually interesting. Like, there's only so many pictures you can post of a wine on a table, like with a setting. Like, it's not, I do social media not only for myself, but I also run social media for two different wineries here. And like, if I just took photos of bottles on tables, nobody cares, right? But from like the more artistic, artsy side of my brain, there is so much like inspiration there. So that's why I have like the Inspired by the Bottle photo series where I do some sort of like conceptual photo that's inspired by the label. And sometimes it goes like really way like left wing, and sometimes you really like see, like other people can see the vision. It just, I don't know. I mean, like it's a bottle.
I know. You know what though? I might be the wrong target, because to me, I always love looking at the bottle. But you're right. In general, I guess what would help more with interest is a Labrador than a Magnum of Pinot.
Yeah, a Labrador, a story, the person behind the bottle.
Yeah,
It
let's go
needs
there.
storytelling.
I often say that sometimes we enjoy wine more. It's an interesting thing if we know the story of it. I don't think anyone cares as much about a piece of steak or a lot of other things we consume. But the story of wine, I feel it always makes us appreciate the wine more. And I imagine just with you and the work you do, you see that all the time.
For sure. I mean, that's probably part of why my dad likes Walla Walla wines, because we went on the trip together and he met the people who made it and he understands the region now and has a connection and a feeling that goes along with it. And I think that's how wine sells in general. You go to the tasting room, you meet the people, you hear the story, you have the memories, or maybe you have a glass of wine over dinner and you're creating your own story with the people who you're with. But I really think it's more about the memories than anything.
Do you get people sometimes complaining or wondering why the bottle that they brought back from Tuscany doesn't taste as good on a rainy Wednesday as it did on their honeymoon?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've complained personally about that. So I mean, it just when you're actually in that environment, it's the feeling that goes along with the wine.
What's one of your favorites? What's one of your favorite memories? Your father, Walla Walla, obviously would be a massive one, because you're now bringing him into your world, which I'm as I imagine must have been really special for you. But are there other memories anywhere in the world where you're like, this is such a gorgeous, perfect place, and this wine pairs well with this moment?
It would be hard to choose just one. I mean,
I
you
know.
were just talking about Tuscany. I went on a media trip there a couple of years ago, and just the wine truly tastes better there when you're surrounded by those like rolling hills and the beautiful vineyard. And I swear the sun just hits the world in a different angle that like everything feels magical all the time. Being there here in Napa, one of my first tastings I did as Wine with Paige was at a smaller winery called Memento Mori. They make really high-end, really beautiful Napa cabs. And it was in their, I think the tasting room's closed now, but in this like little tasting room with like a tin roof, and it was pouring outside. My two best friends were there. Our tasting host, Emily, I still remember her name because she was just, I left feeling like we were best friends after that tasting. I don't know. It's just such a beautiful memory.
Well, that's one of the great things about wine is it brings you closer with your friends. It probably spurs you to travel a little bit more. And it's true. It's funny how that wine with friends, it will always stick in your memory. And as you said, you still remember the person who you tasted the wine with.
Like, wine doesn't exist in a vacuum, which, I mean, to bring it back to the influencer marketing thing, I think that's something a lot of brands get wrong, especially traditional wine writing. Like, I've been on media trips with wine critics, and then there's me, and the wine critics like won't touch the food on the table until they've tasted through the whole lineup on wine. They like, you know, like they don't feel, they're not like part of the experience. They're very like clinical, like very, I don't know, medical almost feeling in the way that they're looking at the wine. And I think traditionally that used to work. We used to love, you know, wine ratings and wine reviews, but I think the newer generation and like this different segment of people who are trying to get into the wine industry to grow it, right? This different segment who's like my audience, they're more interested in those experiences and the story.
More about story and less about adjectives. For you, I imagine you stray away from this wine is slightly bruised, cooked plum, dies in the mid palate, but there's a touch of baked cinnamon on the end. I imagine you're more about feeling than you are about adjectives.
Exactly. And I can do the adjectives. I mean, I even have like sitting right here next to my desk, I have my W set like official wine lexicon. So I can go through all that. Sometimes I do for myself, but like when I'm actually trying to describe a wine to somebody, I mean that this is a great example of my visual tasting notes series. Like I take that feeling that you get with the wine and I turn it into pictures. So that it's kind of like a perfume commercial, right? Like you're trying to explain the feeling that goes with the wine because that's what people connect with.
Yeah, more than honey and chamomile with the perfume. That's how it makes you feel. By the way, what are you drinking now? I am right before we started, you had a small glass of red. I opened up like a 7-8-year-old Spätlese from Mosel. So that's what I got in my glass right now. I love the fact Riesling gets older, just that dark honeyed color notes on it. But what are you drinking?
That's a fun choice. Mine's also fun. So I have, it's Chopatino. I might be saying that wrong, but it's a Italian variety grown here in Russian River, Sonoma, by Communita Winery, Black Lead Winery. Really beautiful label. I feel like you would like that one.
What I love is Northern Italian red varietal in Russian River Valley. That could be a hard sell just because it's a grape that you don't really know of. And we often distrust when a classical, say, Italian grape is being made in the New World.
That's true. But I think more people are getting like the younger demographic, the people who I'm trying to reach, I think are more open to that because they want more of that experience and something weird and different. Like you can only taste so much Pinot in a day when you're over there. Right. I mean, as much as I love Pinot is probably my favorite variety. So don't take that just too hard, but there's only so much you can drink in a day. And so like getting excited about something that you've never tried before and hearing that story, hearing why they're making it, like that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah. Oh, when I heard you say the grape, and then it was from, and I was expecting a conversation about Alto Adige or something, and then you said Russian River Valley. And I'm like, oh, okay. Now I am interested. What do you think are some of the main differences? And not that one characterization is better or worse than the other side, but people say 30 and under versus people 40 and over in terms of how they consume wine or they consume your sites.
I think, well, it's a really interesting time. I was just reading a study about how younger millennials and Gen Z are now looking down. I think it was like 75% of Gen Z is looking to cut down their drinking in 2025, which is crazy. And I think it's just trying to be more intentional with what you're drinking, whether it's supporting cool brands who are doing cool things, or like I said, this is a Black-led winery, which is very uncommon here in California. So looking where you're spending your money, looking and choosing what you're doing, that story, connecting with the brand, as opposed to looking at wine ratings or like traditional media. Like none of my friends, unfortunately, none of my non-wine friends read traditional magazines like Wine Enthusiast, or they have no idea who Robert Parker is. Like, just not what they're looking at.
Well, how different is it? Actually, let's go back to this. What was your first year like? You read the book, you get into it, you're now trying all the different varietals, you're pairing it with food, you're doing this as you're studying, you know, to go into business at the University of Michigan. What was it? What was your first year or your first year like when you started to really take wine influencer and to take that side of your life so seriously?
I never meant to be a wine influencer. I worked in fashion retail for a few years. Then I moved out to California to work for Walmart e-commerce. Mm-hmm. I was a buyer for video game hardware, so PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo. But I took that job knowing that I loved wine, and their office was an hour south of Napa. I was really excited for a big company to pay me to move to a place I wanted to live anyways. And when I moved out here, I did my WSET 3, and I was going to Santa Cruz Mountains, going to Napa, going to Sonoma all the time. And I started sharing what I was drinking, what I was learning, the experiences on Instagram, hoping to build a photo portfolio to eventually shift into maybe doing like websites or something for wineries. I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I eventually wanted to work for myself. I had e-commerce experience and I loved photography and wine.
Yeah.
And somehow accidentally became an influencer. I did it on the side for two-ish years while I continued to work at Walmart. And then the pandemic happened. During that time, selling PlayStations and Xbox, my Walmart job was literally me like picking up a phone every day and being like, can I have more PlayStations? And Sony would be like, no. Or they'd be like, yes. And I'd put them up on the website and they'd sell out in 5 minutes and Walmart would make millions of dollars and blah. Like, good for them. But at the same time, like I was starting to become more and more invested in the wine industry. Like I had relationships, like I was doing Wine with Paige on the side. So I knew a lot of people personally and I knew how much they were struggling. And so I started offering these website and social media feedback sessions for free to wineries so that they could, they lost all of their in-person foot traffic at tasting rooms. And so I wanted to help them learn how they could take their stories that they were telling in the tasting room and turn it digital so they could start selling online. So offered those sessions for free, really loved that, really loved actually making an impact and making a difference for these small businesses who needed it, not Walmart, who doesn't. Ended up leaving Walmart, going full-time into Wine with Paige and moving up to Napa in January of 2021. So really side hustle, didn't know I was ever going to be an influencer. Now it's my full-time thing.
How nervous were you that first 6 months, 2021, when you leave the economic safety of working for Walmart to working on your own, which obviously mentally, emotionally, spiritually is going to be much more fulfilling, but we all have rent to pay. How was it nervous the first little while?
Yeah, I was terrified. I'll be honest, I don't think it ever stopped being scary. I think I'm still a little bit scared every day, but I also have proven to myself over the last, what, four years, that I keep putting one foot in front of the other and ending up okay. But yeah, it was really scary. I knew that I had enough in savings to last 6 months. And if I took that money and lost it all, I'd just go back home and live with my parents was kind of the plan. But thankfully, knock on wood, that didn't happen.
Your dad might be happy then, there'd be better wine on Wednesday night dinner if you moved back home. So,
True. And they're in Georgia, so I unfortunately don't see them very often. So.
yeah, that's a tough commute. The term influencer, we sort of talked about it, but I want to go back there. It feels like it's a polarizing one where some people love it, some people hate it. I think you probably view yourself as a storyteller, as you say. But why do you think that term and the rise of that profession has created so much conversation, some positive, some negative, but a lot of it very loud?
This is a fun conversation. So I mean, there's so much to unpack here, but I think the biggest issue is that it challenges traditional power structures, especially in industries like wine, which have been long dominated by like a singular narrow demographic. Influencing at its core is one of the few modern industries where women have been able to build a successful career without needing permission from gatekeepers. There's like no formal requirement for a title or expertise. It's really like an opportunity where you have to use your own voice, your own expertise, and your ability to connect to people. And nobody can tell you can't do it. And I think that kind of, I mean, I think that scares people.
But for you must love it, not only the freedom, but I loved hearing you and hearing your passion about helping these small wineries, because what you were doing is trying to tell their story at a time when they couldn't tell it because of COVID.
Absolutely. And the way I view it, so I mean, when influencers started in the wine industry, there was a lot more discourse about like, oh, they're just people taking selfies with wine bottles. Like
Right.
they're damaging, like somebody actually told me I was ruining the wine industry when I started.
What?
And I was like, that's a lot of power to give me. Like, thank you.
Yeah, congrats to
I've
being so
always viewed
powerful.
it. I've always viewed it more as expanding the industry. Like, there will always be people who do love wine enthusiasts, who do love Robert Parker reviews, who do look at those. Like, I mean, I look at those because I
Yeah.
like them. I'm nerdy, but I want to expand wine to people who aren't already drinking it, who don't have that connection, who don't want to be nerdy. They just want that, like, the topical fun experience. They want the personal connection. They want those small winemakers. I'm trying to connect with people in a different way about wine and
Yeah.
expand the industry, not take away.
Yeah. Well, that's what I always liked about it. It was that A, I could always tell the effort and the work was there. That's the first thing I look for is the work ethic there. And you were trying to open it up and just make it more fun and just make it less intimidating. And at the very least, what I want more options. I want my decanter and I want Cokie's World of Wine and I want At Wine with Paige as well. Like, there's nothing. Why can't we have a little bit from, it's the same thing in the wine world. Sometimes it's a heavy-bodied Bordeaux red. Other times it's a northern Italian varietal in Russian River Valley.
Exactly. Beautiful.
I do find it interesting that people do seem to get their back up a little bit when it comes to influencer. But as long as someone's putting the work in, I don't know why you can't trust them. Also, don't say you're not nerdy. I've consumed your content. There is a lot of wine nerdery within what you're doing.
Yeah, I just try to make it fun wine nerdery. Like
Yes.
not talking to the camera and just telling you tasting notes or just telling you facts talking to the camera. I try to make it fun.
Yeah, it's you're not just going through the grid if it's medium to a medium plus tannin on that wine. All right, so one of the things that you are doing is merging fashion with wine. When I first heard that, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Then I saw your video with a very high-end California Chardonnay, and I'm like, okay, I see what you're trying to do. Can you explain just you ex Paige what you're doing with fashion and wine?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the ways that I'm trying to make wine more approachable and attract a different audience who might not have thought about wine beyond just what cheap thing can I put in my glass. Like, they want a different entryway. And I love fashion. So, trying to get back to my fashion roots. But I think it's really interesting because we know that you can have a personal style when it comes to clothing. But a lot of times, especially new wine drinkers, don't realize they can have a personal style when it comes to wine and what they want to drink. I really don't think there's like a bad wine or a wrong wine out there. Like, I'm never going to judge you for what you're drinking. Just like, not going to judge you for what you're wearing, like different ways. I think it's a form of personal expression and a fun way to kind of talk about wine facts in a way that you wouldn't expect. So talking about how, like, with the Chardonnay, because it was a more oaky, full-bodied Chardonnay, I wore a dark yellow dress as opposed to like a bright, crisp yellow dress, which I wore for Riesling. Or I did one with Cava and I wore a satin black dress because I feel like Cava, like sparkling wine, is kind of the little black dress of wine. Like it goes with anything. You can dress it up, you can dress it down, you can drink it on a Tuesday, you can wear it on to a wedding. Like it goes with everything, little black dress. But Cava would be like satin. And champagne would be like silk. They both have their own like pros and cons and kind of like
Right.
a different level of luxury to them. And just trying to make wine more interesting in a way that might connect with a different group of people.
And the thing about what you're doing there is you're sneakily teaching someone. This
Yes.
dress is for Chablis. This dress is for Napa Chard. They're very different. And instead of talking about stainless steel and acidity, you're using two different dresses, but you kind of are teaching people, or at the very least, pushing them to learn more about a product they already love.
Yeah, and I probably still would talk about stainless steel versus oak, but it's going to be in a more visually interesting way that's going to stick with people more than just if they're like, the most wine drinkers probably haven't seen a stainless steel tank or an oak barrel, but they do know what this dress looks like versus that dress and like can kind of like visualize what it would taste like.
And we won't get into concrete eggs and what you would wear for that as well. By the way, you mentioned W set. Do you have for people that are out there starting to study, starting to take courses, best memories of it, horror stories studying? I always love talking to people about their wine education journey.
Yeah, I mean, I really highly recommend it. I did WSET 2 back when I just wanted to be nerdy and learn about wine. Had no plans on ever working in the industry, but it was a really great way to expand my knowledge in a very, I mean, formal way, but I think it's very approachable to people who just want to learn about wine, to like learn about wine. Horror stories.
Or just tough moments, like how many grapes are there in Italy? Or wait, I
Oh,
called
gosh.
that that.
Yeah, Italy is the hardest because there's so many weird grape varieties, most of which I can't pronounce, and you don't see regularly. And so Italy was definitely a challenge. Most people get nervous. So WSET 2 is all multiple choice. So if you're a good test taker, you can gamify that. You can do well on that. WSET 3 has a tasting component and written components. And most people get nervous about the tasting component, but I found that wasn't actually that bad. You do enough prep work for it. It was more the like short answers, and like learning how to explain how things go together. That was the challenge, but still fun.
By the way, good for you for not being intimidated. I know people that are diploma level and masters, and sometimes they can get intimidated when it comes to wine tasting and trying to get it right. I know
I think it
recently.
gets harder. The higher up you go, the harder it gets for those tasting like portions.
Oh yeah, no. When you're doing like Albarino versus a Pinot Grigio in Northern Italy, it's like fuck you. Sometimes you're throwing darts. You're right. It does get harder. The higher up you go. You were featured among the top wine influencers by Somm Choice Awards. How important was that for you personally and professionally?
That happened a couple of years ago now, and I thought it was a really cool validation for everything that I've been trying to create and put out there. It's always nice to have somebody else say that you're doing well, right?
Oh, especially when you're in the early stages. What is you often talk when I've seen your interviews? What would you say is your core values or personal brand when it comes to wine and what you do online?
I mean, my bio on Instagram, I think, sums it up pretty well. The best wines tell stories. I think that's how people connect to them. I think it's what makes them interesting. And I really, at the end of the day, again, want to make that pie bigger, get more people into the wine industry, but also help those small wine producers who are trying to get their name out there.
I'd love if a couple of the people, a couple of the companies, wineries you're working with, any stories you love to share, because I love the small ones as well, because it's usually a passion project and you get some of the coolest origin stories.
Yeah, I love Gentleman Farmer Wines is one of my favorites right now. So they have a downtown Napa tasting room called The Bungalow, and it feels like you're stepping into their home. It's owned by Jeff and Joey. It used to actually be in their home up in Yountville before they were able to expand and open a formal tasting room. But even though it's a formal tasting room, it still very much feels personable. Like they have Jeff's dad's fireman helmets in there, like all of their dishware is from their mom or their grandma's. Like it's very personable, and their wines are fantastic. I mean, they're always top of mind for me. And that's one of those places where when you leave it, you feel like you're best friends with them and you just had wine over dinner with somebody who you know.
And would you say is the biggest mistake, we've already kind of covered this, but the biggest mistake that a lot of wineries make when they're getting into social media, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, even just their websites, is there isn't enough focus on story and there's too much focus on soil and how many months the wine is in new French oak.
Yeah, I think a lot of times they lean too much into here is our wine on a pretty table, here's some tasting notes, buy our wine. And it comes across very formal and salesy and kind of like, why would I want this? And so leaning more into that storytelling, and I know it can feel repetitive. I think that's sometimes why it can be helpful to outsource social media to somebody else, because otherwise you feel like you're saying the same things over and over and over. But that's really what your audience wants and needs, is that reinforcement of this is our brand story. This is why you should connect to us. This is why you should care. And really having an opinion. I think having an opinion is something a lot of wineries shy away from because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to ostracize anyone. But yeah. I think having an opinion can form deeper connections. And it doesn't have to be like a political opinion. It can just be like, this is our perspective on wine and food. Join us.
Well, people get nervous because you could say, you know, I don't like red wines from Barossa. And then you'll get some small Australian winemakers getting angry at you. So, I guess I can understand it because wine is so personal that even any sort of opinion can maybe set someone off.
But it also can connect you with your actual ideal audience. Like yeah. I upset people on the internet all the time. And I just have to remind myself, essentially me self-curating my audience, like
yeah.
them curating my audience, I guess, because they're opting out because I did something and that's fine. The people who like what I do are opting in.
Is there a dissenting opinion or someone that wrote something that just really confused you? Like, why are you angry at me for that?
I mean, there's been a few. One of the like funnier ones is I posted a video. I learned this from a wine industry friend who works in a tasting room at a very prominent winery here in Napa. And he showed me how you could just pull the foil off the bottle of wine instead of cutting it. Like if you're in a hurry, it's very helpful. And honestly, just helpful on a regular day-to-day basis. I posted a video showing people they could do that. And I got a lot of angry winemakers in my comments. And there was one who went on and on and on about how like they spend hours and hours deciding like which foil they're using. And it was very disrespectful for me to pull it off like that. And he was unfollowing me and blah, blah, blah. And I just thought that was so interesting because at the end of the day, most people are buying wine to consume within the next 24 hours. So the foil isn't really necessary. Like from a sustainability standpoint, I don't love foil. Yeah. But to be so upset about that when it wasn't his wine, I could maybe see if it had been his wine and I was disrespecting his wine personally, but I wasn't. I'm pretty sure it was a cheap bottle that I used for the example because I knew I didn't want to offend any.
That's hilarious. Also goes to show you the minefields you have to deal with, even though all you're doing is telling stories, want people to get into more wines, a little bit of education on the side. Oh, yeah. We're out of time. Well, we're out of time. I'd love to get you back on again. I had this great Lord of the Rings question we're not even going to get to here. But I was wondering, before we end this page, where's the best place? Where do people go if they want to find all your work?
So best place is Instagram. I'm at Wine with Paige. And then I also have all sorts of stuff on my website, www.winewithpaige.com.
By the way, for everyone listening, is Paige spelled Paige, just in case. Paige, really appreciate. I love the work that you do. I think your story is a really cool one about from where you started, University of Michigan, to Walmart, to now helping to tell the stories of so many small wineries, you know, just making wine more fun, which is kind of what we're all trying to do here anyway. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on iTunes, Apple, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.